Intervju Radija Študent.
Lepo pozdravljeni, še vedno se nahajate na valovih Radija Študent na 89,3. Čas je za petkov intervju. Nocoj gostimo Dejva Samnerja, funkčna ameriškega tehno pionirja, ki kani kasneje nocoj nastopiti na tehno večeru Elements v klubu K4. Hi Dave, how are you?
Very well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So usually when we host American techno pioneers, we're used for them being from Detroit or Chicago, but New York seems a lot of different scene. It's not like an isolated post-industrial depressed scenery, but it's a different environment.
Yeah, but you know, I think that the music from the dance music and electronic music from the States comes from equally, in my opinion, equally from Detroit, Chicago, and New York.
So when did you first get in touch with electronic music in New York?
When I was a kid, excuse me. When I was a kid, I used to live across the street from an outdoor swimming pool. And on Saturday nights, they used to have dance parties. And this was like from 1979 until 82 or 83. And they were playing a lot of, I mean, back then, a lot of stuff was on the radio, so it was sort of pop music in a way. But everything from Human League and Kraftwerk to Afrika Bambaataa and Grandmaster Flash and Man Parrish and stuff like that. So I was exposed to it at an early age.
When did you start DJing?
I started DJing probably 15 or 16 in like 88 or 89. Mm-hmm. Playing a mix of some of that stuff that I just mentioned, but also freestyle and house and then later techno. But
back then it wasn't called techno, probably.
Yeah, well, it you know, when I started hearing the name techno, I later realized that a lot of the records I already had were considered techno. So yeah, the label didn't come to New York until later, but there were hints of the name techno in the early 80s with like Kraftwerk, techno pop, stuff like that. So but the label on the genre, I wasn't really calling things. There were a lot of records that were I was referring to as acid house, and Sweet Exorcist, Test 4, stuff like that. To me, I considered them acid house records, and I came to realize later that they were techno records. So
it was already called techno when you started your residency at the famous New York club, Limelight.
Yeah, definitely.
So you were there co-resident with Jeff Mills. How did that influence you?
I was lucky enough to have him as sort of a resident DJ pretty much every Friday night for a couple of years. I mean, there were some nights when he wasn't there, he was traveling or whatever, but that's when he was first sort of leaving Detroit and Underground Resistance and opening himself up to the world. And I was lucky enough to experience that like in front of me pretty much every week. So he was the first DJ that I ever experienced playing house and techno. I experienced it a lot with hip hop DJs, but not in house and techno, where he would just play records very quickly, and just the mixes were every 30 seconds, and he was literally just like flying through records, and so that was a huge influence on me.
Okay, but those were different times from New York. When did the vibrant times for the music scene change?
I remember being a young kid, 18, 19 years old, and going to the club and thinking to myself, this is so intense, I can see it ending badly. And I think that because of what happened in that club and what was happening in New York during that time, you know, it needed to be cleaned up, and you know, a lot of things went wrong in that club and in the club scene, and sort of the mayor Giuliani at the time, you know, made an example out of them, and after that, it just, you know, they started, you know, there were cabaret laws at the time that weren't enforced. They were laws from like the 20s and stuff like that, and they weren't strictly enforced laws, but when everything went wrong with the club, they reinforced all these laws so that a lot of small places couldn't, they'd have to pay $150,000 to have a cabaret license in order to have people dance in the club. So it really wiped out the nightlife scene, and I don't know if you guys hear about this sort of bottle service type of clubbing that happens in New York now, but that's sort of a result of that, because dancing was stopped, the focus was put into people drinking cocktails and having bottle service and paying a lot of money to have certain types of tables and stuff like that. And yeah, it really ruined the scene, but also the musical output and creativity around that. So it definitely had a huge impact, and it's taken years to sort of come back from that.
So when I met Carl Regis, with whom you worked a lot in the future, did he manage to experience the New York in the...
Yeah, he managed to catch it right before it really disappeared. I met him in 96. He came over for a gig, or for a couple of gigs, and I was friends with the promoter, and I had a big apartment in Midtown and had extra space, so they asked if he could stay with me, and you know, since then we've been like the best of friends, so...
So can you since moved to Berlin 5 years ago, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, it's going to be 5 years in, at the end of November. And yeah, it was it's been a great experience.
Can I draw some parallels with New York back in the day, with so much free space, cheap rents?
Yeah, I think that Berlin resembles the late 70s, early 80s New York. I wouldn't say there are many parallels these days, but if you're going to compare it to late 70s, early 80s New York, I'd say that there are a lot of parallels, because that time in New York, you creatively and artistically, you could really get away with a lot, and downtown Manhattan wasn't really a residential area, so whoever was living there were part of, they were just like weirdo artists that lived in huge loft spaces, and you know, everyone was, you know, a musician, a filmmaker, a photographer, and you know, mm-hmm. you know, performance artist, and you know, you could really, that time in New York was really out there.
So after releasing records on labels like Sine Wave and Downwards and your own imprint Infrastructure, you went on a 4-year break. Is that correct?
Yeah. It wasn't intentional. It just really had a lot to do with inspiration, which is in turn why I moved away from New York into Berlin, because I wasn't getting an influence from my surroundings. And that, and also because I was promoting a lot of parties, and I got sort of caught up in the local scene, trying to push techno and keep techno alive, that I lost sight of myself as an artist for a little while.
Would you say that was also the time when you once mentioned that techno got kidnapped?
Who?
The techno got kidnapped.
Yeah. You know, Carl. You know, Carl and I, like I said, we've been friends since 96, and it hasn't been until I moved to Berlin that we lived in the same city. But even when He was living in either the UK or Berlin, and I was in New York. We still spoke on the phone regularly, and when things started changing, you know, we'd have regular conversations about this stuff, and we sort of, you know, held out, and that period, there were a lot of things changing. I mean, for myself, as a producer, as an artist, things were moving from hardware to from analog to digital. And I was never really a very computer-based person. I always liked hardware and pushing buttons and being able to control things with my hands and having with everything within reach. And the transition of changing from that to doing things digitally, I sort of backed off of releasing stuff for a while just because of the learning curve. And yeah, it was a sort of a bit of a downtime for techno, you know.
Central District, it seemed sort of an answer for those times.
Well, I think out of these discussions that we were having for a couple of years, that's sort of what happened. I mean, it wasn't really planned that way. I think it just sort of naturally happened, which is a good thing. But yeah, it was, you know, the. I just remember during that time when, you know, the whole minimal thing took over, and there were a lot of new younger kids coming into the scene, and they almost wanted to deny everything that existed before and almost didn't care about what happened in the history of techno and electronic music, because they were seeing a bit of, they were getting their attention, and they sort of thought that you know, they were the new popular sound, and they sort of dismissed everything before that. And I thought it was funny because I saw a lot of those same people after a few years then going back and really exploring, and then finally saying, wow, you know what, we should have paid attention to this earlier.
So the whole anonymity thing and space between the artists.
What's that?
The whole anonymity thing with the Central District was meant to emphasize probably the space between the artist and the consumer, the listener.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a tricky thing with being a DJ, because you know, you're very accessible to people as a DJ. If there's a band performing on stage, you can't jump on the stage because security is going to pick you up and throw you off. Like, people can come into the DJ booth and talk to you and tap you on the shoulder while you're playing. So there's I don't know, I personally, I think that there should be a bit of space between the artist and the crowd and the fan, but I think techno or DJing techno and house and stuff like that, there is a lot of socializing that goes on between the DJ and the crowd, and I'm not against it, but I think that, you know, there needs to be some sort of separation between the two.
So just recently, a year ago, you stopped the Central District project.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that we sort of toyed around with for a couple of years. It's something that we always kind of jokingly said, you know, we should stop this, because
the anti-marketing became the marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think that we wound up fitting sort of a press narrative in a way, and it sort of grew legs and became bigger than we expected it to be. And, you know, it's something that started out as sporadic and unplanned and very situationist, and then it started turning into something,
a routine maybe,
that was a routine. You know, we were always priding ourselves on not having a schedule, and, you know, based in situationism, and then started feeling like these outside pressures, like we were supposed to be giving people something in a certain schedule. And yeah, once it became that routine, you know, it was really fun in the beginning. it was really a lot of fun, and then it started becoming a bit dark. And you know, I know a lot of people must think, how could you end it at the height? But it's for us, I don't think it was ever about any of that. It's just the way we act is based on, you know, gut instincts. And you know, I think we're all three of us, John, Carl, and I think, you know, we could be kind of sensitive people, especially to, you know, especially to the way that we're perceived. And we never wanted to be perceived as something that was running on fumes, you know, like something that was over but still existing. Like, we had the control, you know, we ended it, and now you can put it on a shelf and you can sort of look at it and say, yeah, this period was great. You know, there's a lot of, I think we said in one of the statements when it was finished, it was like, it was a glorious death, not a mercy killing like you see.
Stasis is death, see on the other side.
But like, you know, it wasn't a mercy killing like you see in a lot of situations like this. You know, there's a lot of labels out there that...
But you still keep touring as Sandal District.
Yeah, well,
you
that's...
You kept the act, the live act.
Yeah, well, that's a different thing, you know? That's on the performance end, and as a label, as Sandal District, as an artist name or a collective, you know, we feel very confident that we got across the point that we wanted to make in that time frame. And the Sandal District act still exists because you know, we still want to carry on doing what we're doing, and we do. John just released his album with Hospital Productions. I have an album coming out in February.
So you found new inspiration without timetables.
What's that?
You found new inspirations after the Sandal District project.
Yeah, I mean, we still operate as Sandal District. We still are Sandal District. It's just that the label isn't releasing new music on the label. You know, there's a very good chance there'll be Sandal District releases under the artist name Sandal mm-hmm. District on other labels. You know, we're doing remixes. Yeah, we're doing remixes at the moment. We have been since it stopped. You know, there's a Sandal District remix of Ben Sims coming out on Drum Code at the start of next uh-huh. year. We just had a remix request from Marilyn Manson.
So, it sounds better, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a Sandal District remix of Marilyn Manson coming out. So,
okay, any other plans for the future? I heard there's some reissues on the infrastructure label.
I've been working on it for a while, relaunching infrastructure. But the thing is, I'm just worried about it being compared to Sandal District a bit, because it's not going to be anything. It's not trying to be anything like that. Really, the only reason I'm relaunching infrastructure is to reissue some of the back catalog that's been out of print for a while. None of it's been up digitally, so you know, it'll go up digitally now. And I want to use the label as a place to re-release stuff that wasn't even on infrastructure, just stuff that's been out of print. There's a Trackman double pack that was on Ideal Tracks from '95. Mm-hmm. It's Mark Archer, one of the guys from Alternate, and he was one of the founding members of Bizarre Inc. And the record did really well when it came out in '95, but it's, you know, there's a whole generation or maybe two generations of kids that don't have access to that record and don't know what it is. So, and I've seen a lot of reissue labels in the last couple of years focusing so much on reissuing Chicago and Detroit stuff, I've come across a record and became friends with Mark, and he's a lovely guy, and I you know, I could tell he's easy to work with, and I like the fact that he's not from Chicago or Detroit, mm-hmm. But this is a classic acid record, and he is a rave pioneer. He's an alternate, and
would you have even one classic acid house pioneer up your sleeve?
What's that?
You're reworking another.
Oh acid yeah, yeah. This pioneer. A friend of mine, Lenny from New York, he runs a label called Thema, and he became friendly with Steve Poindexter and licensed Computer Madness, which is one of my favorite records as a child, and it's an honor for me to have remixed it. So yeah, he's reissuing it with the a new remastered version of the original, and then there's a function mix, and then there's a function versus Jerome Sydenham mix. So
cool. So
yeah, I think it's gonna be out in the next couple weeks or so.
Since we're being rushed, what have you prepared for tonight? What can we expect?
I'm gonna test out some. I mean, it's sort of a hybrid of live and DJing. But even when I'm DJing other people's music, I play it in Ableton with a controller, so it's sort of edited material. It all comes across as like a live set. You know, I'll add extra drums to stuff, but there's a lot of there's some new material from my upcoming album that I'll be playing out, and yeah.
Okay, Dave, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, tole je bil Dave Samner, Function, ki ga lahko jamete nocoj na večeru Elements v K4. Končujemo intervju, še vedno poslušate 89.3, prihajajo pa obvestila.
Intervju Radija Študent.